This month's mass shooting at a gay nightclub in Orlando, Florida, has put a new focus on issues. During a month when LGBT pride events traditionally occur across the nation and in our own region, Lexington's Pride is this Saturday. All of this is occurring in the context of discussions about laws restricting restroom usage for transgender persons. Following President Obama's May directive to schools about the issue, 11 states immediately filed a suit against the administration. Kentucky has since joined that suit. On this week's Eastern Standard, transgender issues. We'll look back over the past year since gay marriage has been made legal. We'll look to answer questions regarding progress for the gay and trans communities. We're interested in your questions, comments, or personal stories. Write to us by email at wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Post a comment to the Facebook page or send a tweet at WEKUEST. In a little while, we'll open the phones as well. It's time for Eastern Standard, right after the latest news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. Following the mass shootings in Orlando, which occurred during the month, where Lexington's own Pride Festival occurs and Pride celebrations tend to occur across the nation, we're discussing issues of LGBTQ pride and related topics, and we had already planned to talk about transgender issues on this program in the context of legislative activity, which, of course, during this past session for the General Assembly in Kentucky really didn't go anywhere. But many legislatures, many electoral bodies in the United States during this year have passed legislation restricting the use of restrooms by transgender persons. And Kentucky joined in a lawsuit against the Obama administration, President Obama issuing a directive to nation's public schools in May. So we want to talk about transgender issues. We want to talk about LGBTQ issues overall during today's program. And in order to get our conversation started, we've invited two folks to join us for the first segment of our program. And first up with us is Tuesday Meadows. And Tuesday's actually been on Eastern Standard before. Tuesday is a male-to-female transgender woman and an advocate for transgender rights in Lexington and Central Kentucky. She's on the board of directors and member-at-large for Pride Community Services. Her recent piece, Hateful Words Spawn Hateful Deeds, was in the Lexington Herald Leader last week. Tuesday, thank you for being with us.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Always glad to have you here. Eric Alexander is female-to-male transgender man, Eric, I'm going to need you to fill me in a little bit on your background and your involvement. I know you're also involved with Pride Community Services.
Absolutely. I volunteer with the Pride Community Service organization, as well as I'm a member at large on the Pride Committee.
Okay, member at large on the committee. And so what are your responsibilities? What do you do?
Oh, I jump in anytime they need me to do anything. And I run TransLex. I'm the president of TransLex, which is a transgender support group in Kentucky.
Let's talk, first of all, I think the whole transgender issue as we've been promoting is one that doesn't get as much focus as a lot of the other LGBT issues. Let's talk about your stories, if you will. And Tuesday has told her story before on her program, so we'll get you the opportunity, Eric, to just tell us your, is it a coming out story? Is that the way we would describe it?
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate.
Just relax. Take a couple of minutes. Tell us when did you know that get the sense that you were not the female, which was the gender assigned to you?
I was 4 years old.
4 years old.
Yes. I was at a daycare, a kindergarten rather, and I wanted to play with the boys, and I realized that I just wasn't the same as the girls, and I didn't want to be a girl. And that's the first time I really noticed that there was a biological difference between men and women as well, because we did the bathroom training and stuff as well. And I just didn't feel like my body was correct.
How do you see that, your situation, as being different from, I'm of an older generation. We used to think in terms of tomboys, girls who acted a lot like boys. And But they didn't necessarily have a problem with actually being girls. They were just girls who tended to act a little bit more masculine. I mean, is there a difference? Do you draw a line there?
Oh, absolutely. I think the difference to me is a tomboy is okay with their biology, whereas I have an intrinsic, deep-seated need to be biologically different than what I was born with.
So how has that worked out in your life? Like, when did you start taking steps to identify as male? And, you know, to whatever extent you want to share that story with us, what has that meant for you? I'm guessing your age is, you're relatively young, probably not 30 years old yet.
No, I'm 26.
Okay.
I came out in 2014 to my family, and my mom actually helped me pick my name. And we went through a list of, like, family names, and we picked one together because I felt that it was only right since she had named me originally. And they've been really supportive, and I just started dressing how I felt more comfortable dressing. I started presenting as male, and then I went back in the closet for a little while because my dad was diagnosed with cancer, and I felt like it was a lot for my family to bear. And then earlier this year, I started seeing a gender therapist and working through all of that and started presenting as male again, came out full-time and started going on testosterone, which I take every 2 weeks, and started my medical transition. And so at this point, I would consider myself fully transitioned.
And what has that meant from a point of view, certainly with friends, people you're close to? That's a different matter. I'm sure you can have that conversation with them. But what people you work with, or having been in school, in your public interactions with the world, presenting as one person, female, and then all of a sudden now presenting as male. How does one approach that? How do you address that?
Well, I get a lot of questions. I try to approach them all with humor because I understand people are coming from. It's a lot to figure out. And so I get a lot of questions, and, you know, I just try my best to be straightforward, to answer them honestly and openly. I'm not going to lie. I have lost a few friends, but I was very lucky that when I started transitioning, I was employed at the Lexington Diner, and they're an incredible, incredibly supportive and open and accepting place, and they were willing to work with me, let me go by my chosen name, present how I want, and use my preferred pronouns. But I have lost some friends in the process, but luckily I have not lost any family. I was blessed with that.
Eric Alexander is one of our guests on this week's Eastern Standard. We're talking transgender issues on this week's program. During this week before Lexington Pride, we're speaking in the context of the mass shooting that occurred in Orlando just a week and a half or so ago. And our program is an interactive program. We're going to continue our conversation as we invite you to be part of the conversation. Write to us with your questions about transgender issues, your observations, your personal stories, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST. You can post on the WEKU Facebook page or the website. And we'll open the phone lines in just a few minutes as well at 800-621-8890. So please feel free to interact with our guests during today's program. Let me turn now to Tuesday Meadows. And as I've mentioned, Tuesday has been a guest on the program before when we were discussing some legislative issues around transgender persons. And Tuesday, briefly, tell us, again, the story of your transition. You have made the transition to...
Sure.
As a female, a little later in life than some persons.
I'm still transitioning. I've never been this age before, so I think we're all transitioning somewhat. But anyway, 5 years out, I realized that I was a girl.
Five years old.
5 years old.
Okay.
That's a common story you hear, John. You hear most people who are transgender know at four, five, or six, and the reason is that's when we're aware of our gender identity. People who discover that they're gay or lesbian, usually it's after puberty, because that's a sexual orientation. Transgender is our identity. Now, I don't want them to think that means that somebody wakes up one morning, a 16-year-old boy wakes up one morning and decides that he's a girl, because it doesn't happen that way. It happens that they know, and I knew and I'll just speak for myself, but I knew at 5 years old that I was a girl. Now, I didn't look like the other girls, and I didn't have the body parts of other girls, but and when I acted like a girl, my two older brothers and my dad persuaded me in not so nice ways to not act feminine or not act, as my dad would say, you're too sensitive, or, you know, and they used the word sissy too, you know, back then. And so he tried his best to toughen me up. And you know what? You do get tough. And what you do when you get tough, you push it down. And you try to deny it, but it's always there, 24/7. You live with yourself. And you know who you are and what you are. And no matter what you do, you cannot get away from it. You know, I hear people say, why did you decide that? And I said, I didn't decide that. You know, it's just who I am. And people say, I don't understand. And I say, guess what? I don't understand. I don't know why. I said, it just is. And you have two options. You accept it or you don't accept it. And I have no choice. I did not make a choice to do this. And even people say, well, you chose to come out, just like you asked Eric. But you get to a point in your life and I was late in life. I was 60 years old before I came out. And you get to a point in your life and say, do I want to go on with life as it is? Or, you know, and I went through life saying, I'll transition next year. I'll transition in 2 years. And you kind of say this lie to yourself to keep yourself going. But it doesn't work. You know, it just always comes out. So I was 60 when I came out. My wife knew all along. She knew before we was married.
And you were married for how many years?
39 years. And she accepted it because she knew who I was. It was hard for her because she had to come out to her friends and family. And, you know, she would say, you know, people would say, why are you staying? And she goes, sure. She goes, I love her. And she would use the pronouns and people would get all upset because she was staying with me.
You had children.
Likewise. I have a child, uh-huh. And my wife passed away in September from cancer, and I was there for her all the way.
So sorry to hear that.
Thank you. And she was always my biggest supporter and biggest fan, and she knew that I had sacrificed economically. I knew I couldn't make a living if I had transitioned. You know, in the 80s, 90s, it was tough, you know, being anything different. And even your gay and lesbian population, a lot of them were very closeted in the 80s and 90s because it was tough. Now, there are some people that came out and they were very tough, and they were tougher than I was. But it just, you know, I just couldn't do it because I didn't see how I could make a living.
We're going to take a short break, and we're going to return with Tuesday Meadows and Eric Alexander, and then we're going to introduce some other guests in a few moments as well. And we're going to talk a little bit about the current political climate and the issues of the restroom issue. And I want to get your observations also on Orlando before we get much further into the program as well. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. At WEKUEST is the Twitter address. Post on Facebook or the website, or give us a call at 800-621-8890. Your questions, your comments, your observations, your stories are welcome. 800-621-8890. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. Transgender issues, our topic on this week's program. 800-621-8890, our phone number. You can write to us, WEKU Eastern Standard. At gmail.com, post on the Facebook page or the website, or send us a tweet at WEKUEST. With me in the studio right now are Eric Alexander and Tuesday Meadows. Eric is a female-to-male transgender man. Tuesday is a male-to-female transgender woman. And as with everyone in the LGBT community, certainly like to get your comments, however briefly, about Orlando and what that has meant to you in the past 10, 11 days since that horrific event. Tuesday, sure.
Sure. And this attack was definitely on the LGBT community. It was directed at us. I know a lot of people have said that allegedly he had looked at Disney and, you know, and they say people are people, but this was directed at our community. And so we're very supportive of the people in Orlando, and we want to remember them. We're going to do something at Pride Fest to remember the people that were murdered down there. And this was a direct attack on the LGBT community, make no doubt about it.
Eric?
Yeah, I definitely think that it was motivated toward the LGBT community. The timing in June during Pride Month alone tells me that, and not only, you know, the location as well. I just think it's important that we remember the people who have died, the people who are still fighting for their lives, and forget the loser who did it.
Let's talk again. We've got a lot to do in the next 38 minutes of today's program, but let's talk about the issue of the restroom issue. Some call it the bathroom issue. I'm a bit of a renegade. It's like no bath taking going on in these rooms.
The bathroom you use at your house.
But the issue that has come up is people who are concerned about transgender persons, someone such as Tuesday,
sure,
identifying now as female, using the ladies' room.
And it's directed mostly toward me. You know, it's a personal attack on me using the restroom. I know Eric, you know, somewhat, but mostly it's me. And, you know, if people would just sit down and talk to a transgender person, I think they would understand. Most people are undereducated in this area. So when you hear people spout and call me a man, or you say a teenage boy using the girls' room, it's not that at all. A transgender person, I'm as much female as any other woman out there. So it's not what you hear is a slant, or it's something to incite you against transgender people. And you mentioned the Obama administration giving the guidelines to the schools. Most of the schools across the United States asked the Department of Education for guidance. And so the Department of Education came out with the guidance that said, yes, you should let a student use the restroom of their identity. And so then the states decided, well, we don't like that. We're going to sue the Obama administration because they're getting involved with our education system. But these schools and Board of Educations were asking for direction, and they got it. And it's just a directive. And you know what? It's right. It's the right thing. But you know what? It's like going to your parents and you get, you know, give me an answer, Dad. Well, you don't like the answer you get from your dad, so you go to your mom and ask your mom. So it's that's what it's come down to. And, you know, if you go to the Republican governor of North Carolina, McCrory, you know, he directed this House Bill 2 that was directed. It was targeted me. It was really targeted after me. And, you know, it's never right when a government targets a particular segment of our population. Okay. It usually turns out very bad.
Eric, if you'll excuse me, we'll move on to this piece from NPR, and then we're going to invite other guests to join us. But, of course, Eric and Tuesday are going to be here in the studio for the opportunity to interact with listeners later in the program. We're talking about transgender issues during this week before Lexington Pride. And one of the things I'd like to do right now is go to an NPR piece that aired some weeks ago, right around the time when the Obama directive was issued. NPR produced the story on how schools around the country are dealing with the transgender issue. Gabriella Emanuel of the NPR Ed team produced this piece.
The letter went out this morning to more than 13,000 school districts. All of them, it said, need to protect transgender students from discrimination. A transgender student wants to try out for the football team or the cheerleading squad. Let them. A student wants to wear a tux to prom. Go for it. And yes, the bathroom question. The administration says a good practice, let students choose the bathroom that fits their gender identity. There's also a provision that says any student concerned about privacy issues should have access to a separate restroom. And schools shouldn't require a doctor's note before making these accommodations. The basis for all this? Title IX, which outlaws sex discrimination, and the administration is now arguing covers gender identity. This is big news for states and school districts across the country.
They're really in a pickle.
Francisco Negron is the general counsel for the National School Boards Association. He says some states, like California and Massachusetts, already have policies aligned with today's guidelines. But other states, like North Carolina and Mississippi, do not currently make accommodations for transgender students.
Many schools are really being placed in an untenable position.
Stuck, he says, between their own state policy and what the federal government is asking.
We're not changing anything unless we hear an order from the court.
That's Joe DeFeo. He's chairman of the school board in Horry County, South Carolina. He says his district currently deals with these issues on a case-by-case basis. He says he's heard from both transgender students and other students who don't want to share a bathroom.
To me, it's not a discrimination. It's a privacy issue.
DeFeo also argues this should be a state or local issue. Brett Blanchard, the principal of Fairhaven Union High School in Vermont, says his school was already moving in that direction, and today's news gives them a nudge.
The immediate changes were actually just labeling, and this seems small, but labeling the individual bathrooms, not girls or boys or anything.
Blanchard says the football team is co-ed, there are some private showers, and by the fall, they'll have private changing areas in the locker rooms. He thinks there's more at stake here.
This topic extends way beyond what would be labeled now the transgender issues. It happens to be, what does equity look like? What does dignity, what does respect look like?
That said, he worries the federal government pushing on this could make things worse.
As you read the media, you know, it's become a firestorm in some areas. So it actually might add greater controversy.
Today's announcement was not a legal requirement, but the Justice and Education Departments made clear that if schools don't comply, they could face lawsuits or the loss of federal funding. Gabriella Emanuel, NPR News, Washington.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen, and this week we are talking about transgender issues, and this all in the context of Pride in Lexington that is happening in just a couple of days. For folks who listen to the Sunday evening repeat, it happened on Saturday, but also in the context of the massacre that occurred in Orlando a week and a half or so ago. I'm welcoming to the studio now two additional guests. With me now are Richard Nelson, who is executive director of the Commonwealth Policy Center, and Chad Hundley, who is give me your title again, Chad. I'm not sure I have it correct here. I know you're involved with the organizing. You're with Pride Community Services of Lexington. What is your actual title there?
My actual title is the Pride Community Services Organization Office Manager. I run the Pride Center on Waller Avenue.
You're the paid staff member there?
I am.
Keep things going.
I am. I am also the vice chair of the Pride Festival and the sponsorship chair.
Okay, and Chad will fill us in on what is happening at Pride this weekend. But let's start with Richard as perhaps the dissenting voice on some of these issues. Talk about the Commonwealth Policy Center and where you all weigh in on issues of, for instance, the transgender restroom issue.
Sure. Thank you, John. It's always good to be on the program.
Thank you for being here.
Hey, of course, the Commonwealth Policy Center is a nonprofit public policy group, and we come from the perspective that we have a creator who's given us our rights and our freedoms. We come from the view that society rests on certain pillars, and one of those pillars is religious freedom, the right to life, and in marriage between a man and a woman. And I realize that that's controversial with even some of those around the table. But you know what I'm really glad about? That we can sit around this table and have this discussion, that we have the freedom and the ability to discuss a very difficult issue. The Commonwealth Policy Center has taken the position that gender is something that is that's fixed, that our creator has created us male or female, and that it's biologically determined through our genes, that if you have an XX chromosome, that you are female, XY, that you're male. And so we see this as a fixed category and something that isn't up to us as individuals to determine. There are a lot of things that influence how we perceive ourselves. I think that this whole issue really has taken off in the last year or so, where it was a year ago this month when the Obergefell ruling was handed down that that allowed for homosexual marriage, and this is maybe the continuation of that. One of my concerns, and the concerns of the Commonwealth Policy Center, is that when young children who 4 or 5 years old, and I appreciate your stories and you sharing that. I'm looking at Tuesday and Eric. But I think when you're that young, 4, 5, 6 years old, that you don't have the cognitive capacity to make such life-altering decisions. We don't allow young people to drive a car. We don't allow them to drink alcohol. And I would say that when you're that age, you really don't understand. There might be confusion. And all of us as kids, 4, 5, 6, we're trying to figure life out. When you're a teenager, you're trying to figure life out. But to allow them to make this decision to transition from one gender to another, I don't think is helpful. The science tells us that those young people who do transition end up not being helped, but end up going into a worse direction or an unhelpful direction. John Hopkins University used to do gender transition surgeries. They did it for years and years, but they stopped doing it because they found that after the gender transition took place, that those patients were worse off than before they began. Another study that was shown by Vanderbilt University and another university found that 70% to 80% of young people who identify with the opposite gender, after a period of time of several years, end up losing those feelings. This was Paul McHugh who referred to that, or those two studies. He was the former psychiatrist in chief at Johns Hopkins University, and he's been a very outspoken person against gender transition. And so we're dealing with this now, this letter that was sent by the U.S. Department of Education and the Justice Department, essentially telling all of the public schools in the country that they have to open up their restrooms, locker rooms, sports teams to young people who identify with the opposite gender.
Now, Richard, this again from the administration to public schools. Do you see a distinction, though, between these decisions that are made when it comes to public policy in our nation of separation of church and state? We talk about freedom of religion. Yeah. The fact that our government can't really take a position from a religious point of view, and if your beliefs are based on, your belief in the Creator, mm-hmm. and a theological yeah. viewpoint, essentially, why should that affect public policy? Can we not, live in a nation where same-sex marriage is allowed and recognized by the state, as well as acknowledging the very specific circumstances of transgender persons, and your beliefs and folks who believe the same can continue to believe as you believe and act accordingly.
Yeah. And of course, John, good question. We all have a set of beliefs and values. Some of us have deeply held religious beliefs. Some have a secular worldview that they approach issues from. The story of our country, though, is there are theological presuppositions to America. The Declaration of Independence acknowledges a creator that endows us with inalienable rights. I would say that our laws, or the idea of the rule of law, presupposes a higher being that gives us rules by which to live by.
And wouldn't life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness be areas in which person's ability yeah. to express themselves yeah. as they choose and as they recognize in some, yeah. within themselves, wouldn't that be part of that
it would be.
Preamble to the yeah. or to the Declaration of Independence?
It would be. You're right. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But you remember, they're tethered to the idea of a creator. So if you're getting those rights from the Creator, you're also following the parameters by which the Creator gives us those rights to live by. For example, the pursuit of happiness. So somebody defined it, John, as, well, I think I'm called to kill other people. That's a far-out example. But we all know that you cannot do that. That's not the pursuit of happiness, that there are parameters within the pursuit of happiness is to be pursued. And I would say the same with this discussion we're having, that gender is something that is assigned to us, that we're born with, and it's not up to individuals to determine it. And I say that, by the way, we to have this discussion Tuesday, and I read your article in the Lexington Herald Leader, and I responded yesterday. I had a piece that came out in yesterday's Lexington Herald Leader. But regarding Orlando, that was a tragedy, terrible tragedy that happened. We as a country should grieve over that. We should be able to gather around the family, extend our compassion to them, support the first responders and those who are helping the families who've lost loved ones. We should be able to grieve together to help those who are wounded. I don't think it's helpful to point fingers and to vilify and to say, because you have a different belief on this, you can't grieve with us. Because you believe that marriage is between a man and a woman, or believe that gender is a fixed category, that you have no part in this. I think that we, as Americans, will disagree on issues.
Let me introduce this issue, though, Richard. We talk about the Orlando situation, and all of it is in flux, and we're getting new information every day. But it appears that perhaps the shooter, Mr. Mateen, may have been himself a victim of self-hate, may have been himself a person who had been suppressing his sexuality, who had been hiding his sexuality from the world. Isn't that self-hate somehow caused by a society that has certain expectations and by perhaps his family's religious background, perhaps the culture in which he was raised, and what happened was an explosion that killed 50 people, including himself?
Yeah, that could have been what's going on. He deeply identified as being a Muslim, and he was offended. News reports say that he was offended when people made fun of his faith or contradicted his faith. That could have been going on, but if we just address what we know for sure, that he did identify as Islam, as a follower of the Islamic State, as a supporter of al-Baghdadi. He called 911 a couple of times to let people know that this was essentially it was a jihadist attack. That's what he did in his own words. If you look at the 911 transcript, he peace be unto Allah, glory to God, things like this in the middle of his attack. So we know that for certain, John. The other things that were going on in his mind we're speculating on, and I think those are points well taken, but we do know that he was claiming to be a soldier of Islam.
And this is an unbelievably complex situation. We are due to take another short break. We're going to get Chad Hundley into the conversation here and talk about Lexington's Pride event happening in just a couple of days. And we're interested in your comments about transgender issues, Pride. Perhaps an observation or two on the Orlando massacre. 800-621-8890. Write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest. That phone number, once again, we'll be glad to get you on the air in the next 20 minutes or so. 800-621-8890. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU station's transgender issues in the context of Lexington Pride coming up in a couple of days. The shooting, the mass shooting in Orlando, all on our minds. 800-621-8890 is the number you're welcome to call. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. We do have an email that came in a little while ago that we'll get to in just a moment. But let me get on the air first, Chad Hundley. And Chad is office manager, director, staff member for Pride Community Services of Lexington, and very much involved in making Lexington Pride happen on Saturday. Chad, why don't you give us the overview of what's happening? And as our conversation talking about transgender issues, where does transgender fit in the planning for this year's Pride?
Well, obviously, transgender fits right smack into the middle of it. They are a part of our community as a part of everybody's community as a whole. We cannot be the LGBTQ community without the T. So a little bit about the Pride Festival. It's this Saturday at the downtown Courthouse Plaza, Robert F. Stevens Courthouse Plaza at 120 to 150 North Limestone. Located right smack in the downtown Lexington area. Festivities and entertainment kicks off at 11 a.m. and lasts until about 10 p.m. that night. We have 100-plus vendors this year, which is really exciting.
Now, last year's was widely stated as, I guess, the largest pride in Lexington ever?
Yes. This was just days after.
Was it the day after the Supreme Court decision?
I was Pride Festival chair last year, and I'm vice chair this year. And we had the police guesstimated it at right at 30,000 folks.
And in terms of this year, what are the expectations? I mean, one, in the context of Orlando, and two, I mean, I guess originally there would have been thought that this year would be much more of a celebration because of the first anniversary of the Supreme Court decision. Meanwhile, all this transgender conversation has been going on restrooms. I mean, how has the planning for Pride evolved as a result of current events?
Well, the Lexington Pride Festival has had a very close relationship with the Lexington Police Department for many years as it is. They've been very visible at our festival for the past few years. Of course, there will be increased security, increased awareness at our festival. A lot of folks may be concerned about their safety and such with the recent events in Orlando and LA Pride as well. It will not stop us. It is a celebration first and foremost, but second of all, I look at it as an education and awareness event. It's all about educating the public that there are diversities, that we do have different opinions, even at this table and outside of this table as well, that we can come together as a community and celebrate who we are and what we are.
I want to get Tuesday Meadows back into the conversation. I know Tuesday has some reaction to comments by our guest, Richard Nelson of the Commonwealth Policy Center. Tuesday, again, transgender male to female, transgender female. Thank you, Tuesday, again, for being here.
You're welcome. I'd like to respond to a couple of things. First of all, thank you, Richard, for making my point that people murder in the name of God. That was great. You made my point that I've been trying to point out to everybody that people murder and hate in the name of God.
I don't think I did that. But
oh, yeah,
okay.
You did. Oh, thank you. And mm-hmm. And what age did you know you was a boy?
Well, it's not about me realizing when I was a boy or whatever, but it's about a biological reality. And this debate doesn't depend on me or my feelings.
Sure,
and,
sure.
And I think the whole thing it's about a biological category, something that is fixed.
It depends on
the genetics, and it depends on I mean, there's male and there's female, and those are good things, Tuesday, that there is
male
and female.
Why are they good things? Why?
This is the way the Creator made us. And I realize I'm coming from a theological perspective, but just because I have a theological perspective doesn't mean that that view has contributed to the violence in Orlando. And I think that that's not helpful to the conversation. I can grieve with you and with other members of the gay and lesbian community, and I can and assist, and I can offer compassion. But that disagreement doesn't make me an evil person. Those are two different categories, and I don't think we should confuse them. There's disagreement on issues, and then there are real evil people.
So you offer me condolences one day a year, and another 364 days a year, you're trying to kill me?
No.
Well, keep it yourself. I don't want it.
Let me ask you this, Richard. I mean, when we talk about Christian love and compassion, how do you feel when you hear the stories of people such as Eric and Tuesday, who have spent, and again, Tuesday, so a little older than Eric, but for their lives have agonized over the issues of their gender identity.
Yeah. My heart, and Tuesday may have a hard time believing this, but my heart goes out to you because I realize that you have probably faced, you've had that inner turmoil, probably have faced a lot of anger towards others, angry at you. I feel compassion. But that doesn't mean that I have to agree with your decision. It doesn't mean that I have to agree with the idea that young people should have transgender or mixed gender restrooms or locker rooms. I think those are, again, two different categories. But I can grieve with you all 365 days of the year when there's a crime against the homosexual community, a crime that's a person, and again, that's a human being made in the image of God. Tuesday, you have value and respect, and you have dignity because of that idea that we're made in the image of God.
I can uphold that,
but disagree with you on the issue.
I'm a Christian. I'm just as Christian as you are. Okay, you're not more Christian than I am. I'm just as Christian as you are. So let's get that straight right away. And I think the fact that you quote some surveys or you quoted some research papers that have been discredited. You quoted a doctor who's been totally discredited by the American Psychiatric Association. You read the American Psychiatric Association. They have taken gender identity disorder and got rid of it, just like homosexuality used to be a disorder in the 1970s. Mm-hmm. Now the DSM-5, which is, you know, the American Psychiatric Association's their manual that all psychiatrists are supposed to go by. Yet you're quoting a doctor that doesn't go by the manual or by the book. And, you know, to me, that's like somebody saying, "Hey, chicken fat will cure cancer." Put the chicken fat on your.
Let me interrupt here, and let's get our listeners involved in the conversation. First of all, let me see if I can summarize this email that came in early in the program. Jonathan made an effort to write to us early in the show, saying about a year and a half ago, my then 19-year-old came out as transgender. We were accepting and supportive from the beginning, but understanding comes hard. It was and is very difficult for us to get what identifying as a gender other than that indicated by your birth plumbing is all about. But our research and experiences then has taught us that both sex and gender are continua, not binaries, and that transgenderism has been with us a long time. The bottom line, I think, for those with a transgender family and friends is that transgender is not a decision or lifestyle choice. It just is. Second, we don't have to get it in terms of being able to identify. We just have to accept it and to love them. Thank you for that comment, Jonathan. I do want to, and we're going to get to the phone here in just a moment. Here's a very quick comment as we're talking about religion and being Christian and so forth. Sean writes, "There are no exceptions to the golden rule, which is Jesus' most important request. As a straight ally, I'm again going to the festival. Awesome interview." Thank you, Sean, from Lexington. Let's go to the phone, and I think that on line four is Chris from Shelbyville. So let's see if this is Chris from Shelbyville. Thank you for calling, Chris. You are on the air. Go right ahead.
Hi. I just had a quick thought because your guest was commenting about how the Declaration of Independence recognizes that there is a creator as a higher authority. And my comment is, yes, but what if my belief and my theology state that the creator creates individuals who identify with an opposite gender and puts them before us, so that we can learn his acceptance and his love for people who are different? And if that is the faith that I abide by, then we cannot allow a faith that is counter to that to sit here and beat heads back and forth. We have to find a solution that both faiths agree on. And so saying acceptance of a creator means that you have to accept one way, whereas acceptance of secularism means a different way, doesn't seem to fit with the idea of we shall not infringe upon the liberty of one individual's freedom of their religion to choose their religion and practice their religion if we're then going to use that religion as justification for any action. We have to then turn around and say, no, we have to pull religion out of it.
All right, Chris, thank you so much. We'll get Richard Nelson to respond.
Yeah, I think that unless you define what liberty is and what freedom is, they can have it tethered to something that is immutable and fixed. And the founding fathers acknowledged a creator. Now, they acknowledged a creator from a biblical worldview. Didn't mean they were all Christians, but they had a biblical worldview of life, of law, of government. But they understood the idea of rights, too, that they came from a creator. If they didn't come from a creator, they came from government. And if government gives rights, government can take them away. But one of the things the caller mentioned was liberty. And liberty could mean anything unless it's tethered to something that is fixed. And I would say that there are some things that are biological truths. There are categories that we don't have the liberty to change or to alter. And I would say that biology is one of those. One thing, if I could mention, that Tuesday brought up Dr. McHugh at Johns Hopkins University, and his column came out in the Wall Street Journal recently where he shared the quote that I'd shared with you. But he was a very accomplished person in the field of psychiatry. Gender dysphoria was considered an anomaly by the DSM, American Psychiatric Association handbook, until 2013. And it's interesting that it didn't change because of new science. It wasn't new studies out there, but it was a political maneuver that changed it. And there really isn't good evidence that shows that it's been helpful for biological males or biological females to transition into the opposite sex.
Let's go back to the telephone. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, and I believe this is Lenormie. Is that your
yes.
name? Great. Thank you.
It is.
Thank you for calling, Lenormie, and you're in Lawrenceburg. Go right ahead.
I am. My point that I would like to make is that, yes, my sex, and let's differentiate sex and gender here. Sex is the biological outcome of XX and XY. My sex is female. I had no choice in that. That's just how I came out of my mother's womb. I also came out of my mother's womb with brown eyes. I came out of my mother's womb with a positive blood type. And there has been no effort that I know of throughout history to assign division of labor, to regulate access to opportunity, or anything else by my eye color or my blood type. Now, the fact that we regulate access to opportunity and division of labor by gender goes back a very long time when humans felt the need to divide things up based on, quite frankly, what we presented to the world when we were standing naked. It has nothing to do with our spirit. It really has very little to do with our abilities. Gender is an entirely man-made assignment. And I look forward to the day when we will no longer consider sex or gender, except in terms of biology, just as my blood type is not an issue unless I need to receive or give blood.
All right, Lenormie, thank you so much for your call. This is Eastern Standard. Richard Nelson of the Commonwealth Policy Center, why do many people, many believers, focus so much on gender issues and sexuality issues? And, you know, people, so many religious beliefs have very strong feelings about sexual activity and sexual identity.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot in there, sexual activity, sexual identity, gender.
Which, absolutely.
And I guess, you know, this is a, gender is a, first of all, the religious people believe there's a creator who made gender. Being male is good. Being female is good. And the Christian story is that God made them together to join together in what's called marriage, male, female. And out of this union, children come into existence. And there are different parts of humanity. And this is a religious idea that male has certain men, the male gender has certain strengths, certain weaknesses. And if you're married, your wife will point out those weaknesses. Same with females. There are certain strengths and certain weaknesses. There are some things that only females can do. They can only bear children. They're born with a uterus and with ovaries, and they bear children. They're given breasts to nurture the child. There's a little different psychology, too. Men think differently, and I'm reminded of this. My wife tells me, you're on a different track than I am. And that's not bad. It's just different.
But there are many in believers, and it seems to be a growing trend of believers who still believe, as Tuesday identifies as Christian, who still believe in God, still believe everyone in the room identifies as a religious, believing in
John. God made me exactly the way I am.
But my point is that many people who do believe in God believe that God loves us no matter what.
Yeah.
And that is the core. I'm sorry for cutting off this conversation, but we're running out of time here. I want to get Chad back in here. Let's talk again in the couple of minutes we have remaining about Lexington Pride happening on Saturday. By way of disclosure, WEKU is a media sponsor of Pride for the second year in a row. So we'll be present there, as will other organizations in the community. 100 and some organizations there this year?
100 plus. A lot of churches, actually.
So, and what happens at Pride? I mean, it's a festival. People can walk around and interact, and there's entertainment. There are other activities and so forth.
Sure. There's a large kids, children's activity section. We have tons of food vendors that will be there, entertainment all throughout the day. So lots going on all throughout the day.
And following the Orlando shooting, I know I went to the vigil and the police chief was there talking about the city and the mayor were talking about the city's response and mm-hmm. the fact that the city is going to be working to make sure that it is a safe event. How can we assure people that, that this will be a safe event?
The Lexington Police Department works very closely with us, as I stated earlier, with just increased awareness. It's even if we have a kettle corn festival is what we like to refer to it as, there will be increased security. Ever since the bombing at the Boston Marathon, there's increased security at every event now.
Let me draw Eric Alexander in and talk about the trans community's role in Pride. Folks want to learn more and meet persons. Maybe they've never met a transgender person before. Will that be an opportunity?
Yes, we have Trans Lex, Trans Kentucky, Transparent. And actually, the Trans Kentucky Orchestra is going to be playing as part of the entertainment festival as well. So there will be plenty of opportunity to come by, pick up information, and just talk to people from all walks of life who are in this together.
Folks, we're going to put information about all of our organizations and the subject matter of today's conversation, of course, linked to the Commonwealth Policy Center, to Lexington Pride Community Services Organization, TransLex, et cetera, on the WEKU website for Eastern Standard. Thank you for this conversation. I know we've kind of gone a number of different directions. Grateful for each of you for being here. Richard Nelson, Chad Hundley, Eric Alexander, and Tuesday Meadows, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us, John.
And thank you all. Also to our producers, Marissa Hempel, Brian Burkhart, and Grant Willoughby, who put together today's program. At the controls, we've had Roger Duvall. Eastern Standard is available online later today as a podcast, and we'll repeat Sunday evening at 6 o'clock. We're always interested in your feedback about programming at WEKU, including Eastern Standard. Write to us, WEKU Eastern Standard@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at WEKUEST. For WEKU and Eastern Standard, I'm John Hingsbergen. Thanks for tuning in.